Literally from the North Shore presents Dean Hovey's book Whistling Sousa in 14 episodes. This is episode 9. Nothing that comes to mind, but it might be nice to have your cell phone number in case something comes up. He rifled through his wallet and pulled out a business card. It said Brian Johnson, listed his occupation as tubist, and had his cell phone number and an email address. I read the card and asked, "You're advertising yourself as a tubist. Do you play with other groups besides the Two Harbors Band?" "I pick up gigs every now and then with a small ensemble playing polka music at wedding receptions, but that's irregular, and the accordionist is an octogenarian who sometimes forgets which songs we're playing. Other than that, I get an occasional request to sit in with some local groups who are staging musical plays." "Like the Lester Park Theater?" I asked. Brian's eyes twinkled as he made the connection. "You're Audrey Rogers' son." "Yes, but you don't need to spread that around." "I'd swear she was a tubist if I didn't know better. She emotes like a melodrama villain and tells jokes like a sailor. She's a hoot at the cast parties." "Yes, I'll bet she is." I thought about Sheila, who was obviously a bit of an irritation to the band. She skipped rehearsals and showed up late for performances. Those things annoy the other band members, but would anyone be angry enough to kill her? I'd screwed up when she walked onto stage. If I'd been more observant and less shocked by the cocktail dress and her natural beauty, I might have noticed someone who seemed angry when Sheila walked onto the platform. Maybe it was her appearance. All the other band members were dressed conservatively in white shirts and blouses over black pants, skirts, and slacks. I couldn't even recall any of the women wearing skirts. Sheila was so over the top in her dress that maybe someone snapped. Brian warned me about Sheila's appetite for younger men. Had she recently dumped a lover? Was she dating a married man? Did an angry wife find out about an affair? Was I imprinting a stereotype on her because of her looks and attire? Was there an ex-husband on the outskirts of the picture? Another question kept gnawing at the back of my mind, refusing to surface. With a sudden flash of the obvious, I grabbed a notepad and scrawled the question that seemed most strange. Sheila had the third-place quilt? My stereotypical quilter was over 50 and meticulous, willing to spend endless hours alone picking out, trimming, and pinning pieces of fabric, then carefully sewing them into the intricate patterns that one prizes. Sheila just didn't seem to fit any of those categories, but I didn't really know her well enough, although I now suspected she was probably close to that age. She was obviously artistic, and right-brain artistic flair often spills into other creative avenues. Wendy stuck her head in my office, jarring me back from my musings. "Pete, I need a four-letter word for scalawag, and jerk doesn't fit." She tapped a pencil with a gnawed-off eraser and teeth marks on the yellow paint, staring at the crossword puzzle intently. "Try roué," I said. "Spell it," she said, scrubbing the stubby eraser on her previous answer. "R-O-U-E," I replied. "If you're being proper, there's an accent on the E." She wrote letters in four boxes, then quickly filled in more letters. "Thanks," she said, and disappeared. Before I turned around, I saw her head was peeking around my door frame again. "Would you like to stop off somewhere and get a drink after work? Technically, it's my day off, but I'm not opposed to grabbing a beer later. Let me see if Jenny has any plans for us." "I was thinking that maybe you and I could go alone, you know, to get to know each other outside of work." Having been to a few of your band gigs and seeing too much of the teddy bear tattoo that hides under your turtleneck, I thought we knew each other pretty well. I hesitated, then thought back to the nude woman on my computer screen after Wendy's date with another sleazeball. "Are you talking about going on a date?" Wendy cocked her head and considered her answer. I'm not sure. It's just that I've had such a long string of losers, I thought maybe spending an evening with a nerdy guy with no life outside of work might give me an indication about whether I could be satisfied with that kind of relationship. I can understand that, I replied. You can sit around the house eating frozen pizza and drinking beer with Jenny and me. Wendy cocked her head the other way. I'd rather give it a try without Jenny around. You know, just in case we really hit it off and want to move along. That's not happening, I replied. You flirted with me when I first started here, and you said my life was way too boring. Well, maybe I'm at a different point in my life where boring might be more palatable. You know, maybe it's time for the quiet life of watching television all evening and going to bed after the news, making love to my hubby, and then getting a few hours of sleep before work. She paused and asked, Do you have a tattoo? I think I'd feel more comfortable with someone who has a tattoo. You know, someone who's enough of a bad boy to get a tattoo, but with enough discretion to locate it where it wouldn't show up at work. If I think of someone like that, I'll let you know. I'm already spoken for. Do you have a tattoo? It's irrelevant. I'm in a committed relationship. Are you sure? You've been dating Jenny, like, forever, and you don't seem to be taking that relationship anywhere. Maybe you need a change of pace, you know, ratchet up the romance side of your life. No, Wendy, you're barking up the wrong tree. Go away and work on your crossword. I looked through the music. A few of the marches were unfamiliar to me, but nothing terribly difficult for a group of experienced musicians. Overall, I was impressed with the band and the director's choice of music. Surprisingly, I had a few butterflies and a little apprehension as I flipped through the songs a second time. I was about to put the music away when I remembered seeing the triumphal march from Aida. The second movement had a bassoon solo. Sheila needed to be at the concert. I fumbled around in the music and found Brian Johnson's cell phone number. He answered on the second ring. How can I reach Sheila? I asked. With both arms? He asked. No, seriously, I need to talk to Sheila. She has a solo Thursday, and I have to know if she's going to show up. Would you show up for the next concert if someone had just poisoned you? He asked. I don't know, and that's irrelevant, because I need to know if she's going to be at the concert. If she doesn't plan to play, I have to ask John Carr to play the solo with a tenor sax, or I should drop the song from the playlist. She works at the bank in Silver Bay. I think she's a loan officer or something. Thanks, I said, thinking about how long it would take to drive to Silver Bay and back. Peter, don't let her get you alone. I saw her looking at you like a side of beef hanging in the butcher shop. Really? I asked, thinking of my discussion with Wendy and starting to feel paranoid about unwanted female attention. Well, I did see her looking at you, but it might have been because you were directing the band. The drive to Silver Bay, the next town closer to Canada, took less time than it took me to find the bank. The low brick building had a flagpole in front and looked amazingly like a library. The bank wasn't large, and a few offices lined the north wall. I stood in a teller line until I reached the front and asked for Sheila. The teller asked me to stay at her station while she walked to the corner office. After a short discussion, she motioned for me to come over. A tall, fit, well-groomed man was slipping his suit jacket on as he approached the door. He flashed a smile of bleached teeth and offered me his hand. He had a firm grip with a hand that had seen a manicurist more recently than it had seen manual labor. I understand you're looking for Sheila. If you need a loan, I can offer my assistance. His smile was blinding. I'm Ron Breck. I'm Peter Rogers, the temporary director of the Two Harbors Band, and I'd hoped to speak with Sheila about Thursday's concert. The smile melted, and he pointed to a guest chair in front of his cherry desk. as I checked out the certificates of appreciation for support of local charities and ball teams, he slipped his coat off and hung it behind the door. His desk was bare except for a professional photo of him with a beautiful woman and two small girls sitting on the rocky Lake Superior shore. "Sheila's not here," he said as he sat heavily in his leather chair. I sat, waiting for more, but that was the full extent of his offering. "Do you expect her later, Ron?" I asked. "I'm not sure. Probably not." I was stymied. I had played the card of band conductor and got no response. Did I dare press ahead as the reserve deputy investigating Sheila's attack? I decided to stay low-key. Besides, I was certain he wasn't going to turn over private information from her personnel file to some guy he's never met with questionable credentials. "Is there some way I can contact her? She has a bassoon solo Thursday night, and I need to know if she's well enough to play." He drummed his fingers on his desk and stared at a spot behind my left ear. "Sheila had a severe allergic reaction during the concert at the fairgrounds," I said, assuming I was sharing background he already knew. "I'm concerned she's not feeling well, and she has a solo in the second set of songs. I need to know if she's well enough to play." "I haven't seen her today," he said, changing his gaze from the corner to my nose. "She called and said she was working from home, but she's logged on to the server. I have no idea where she is or when she'll be back in the office." He continued to drum his fingers on the desk. "Can you give me her phone number? I assured her address would be confidential." "Maybe a bank cell phone number," I added. He ran his fingers across his lips in a motion that made me feel like he was telling me, with body language, that his lips were sealed. His eyes darted to a walnut plaque mounted near the corner. "You might try to friend her on Facebook." His response was so odd, I said, "I'm surprised you'd refer me there to contact her. I can't give you anything from her personnel file, but I understand she's usually active online." I looked at the computer on the corner of his desk. "Can you pull up Facebook so we can look at her site?" "No," he replied. "Let me guess, her homepage isn't appropriate for the office." "Rumor has it that she has interesting photos and status updates. I've refrained from venturing there, hoping we could maintain a professional work relationship." "Is she a good employee?" I asked. "Good is a rather subjective word. She writes a lot of loans for us, and her customers have financial qualifications that please the bank's investment committee. Based on what I've heard, I'm guessing that most of her loan customers are men," I said. "Yes," he said, almost squirming. "I'd also guess her work ethic and office apparel are less than totally professional." "You're Peter Rogers," he said. A look of recognition swept his face. "You're the one who found the bagpipers for Axel Olsen's funeral last spring." It was my time to squirm. "Yes, I was in charge of the arrangements for Axel's funeral." Ron's smile returned. "I heard that the British Honor Guard and band were incredible. I'd like to know what strings you pulled to make those arrangements." "It just fell together," I said, knowing the arrangements had been an accidental convergence of many items far beyond my control. "People will be talking about that funeral for years. You are legendary." "Thanks," I said, hoping to close the funeral discussion. "The best place for me to contact Sheila is her Facebook page." "Really?" Ron rose from his chair and closed the office door. "Between you and me," he said, returning to his chair, "I have no idea how to contact her. You can leave a voicemail on her bank phone, but I don't know when she checks the messages. I've heard she's on Facebook regularly." "Start there." He rifled through a stack of business cards and handed me one of Sheila's cards. It showed she was a loan officer for the bank, and the phone number had a Silver Bay prefix, which made me think it would ring at her desk and not on a cell phone. I take it that Sheila isn't Employee of the Month very often, I said, pocketing the card. If she didn't write more high-quality loans than all the other loan officers combined, I'd be helping pack up her office. Although I'm not sure we could clear the dust on her desk without a hazmat team. If she's not here regularly, where does she find the customers? I asked. I have one loan officer who entertains customers at the golf course through his contacts with the Kiwanis and Lions Club. The rumor mill says that Sheila spends a lot of time at the gyms in Silver Bay and Two Harbors and leverages those contacts into loan applications. She also has a large sailboat in Duluth, and she does a lot of customer entertaining on the water. I have adopted the don't ask, don't tell policy when it comes to Sheila. I'll leave a voicemail for her, then I'll try Facebook, I said, rising from the chair and shaking his hand. Good luck, Peter, he said, shaking my hand again. If you ever want to talk about a loan or moving your banking here, I'd be happy to work with you. Since I didn't have a computer to access Facebook at home, I drove back to Whistling Pines and opened Facebook. A quick search pulled up Sheila O'Keefe's homepage. Her picture was a glamour shot taken a decade ago, and her status was available. I sent her a friend request, and as I started to shut down the computer, it pinged, and I was notified that my friend request had been accepted. I saw the green dot indicating she was actively online, so I fired off an instant message and asked, "Will you be at Thursday's concert?" I waited for a response. "Meet me" popped up. "Why?" I typed. "I want to talk face to face." "I'm busy," I typed. "Blackwoods in half an hour or I won't show Thursday." "Okay," I replied, again considering Brian Johnson's admonition about not meeting her alone bouncing through my head. Blackwoods was a public restaurant. There'd be people there. I'd be at a table with her, but there'd be people around, I kept thinking. I arrived at the Blackwoods restaurant a few minutes early. The hostess took me past a bank of flaming ovens with chickens slowly roasting on spits and sat me in the dining room. The dark wood and rough-hewn timbers made it feel like an upscale Northwoods lodge, but that was offset by the view of cars passing on Main Street. I declined any beverage, thinking alcohol might lead to an unwanted lowering of inhibitions, and that might prove deadly from a relationship standpoint. The dining room was filled with business people, dressed in business casual. Khaki pants and golf shirts dominated. Sheila was fashionably late, and when she entered, every male head turned. Her blonde hair was tied back in a short ponytail, and she was wearing a pink tube top that enhanced her attributes and white shorts, leaving me with the impression she was trying to look 20. I was seated at a table with two chairs on one side and a bench seat on the other. I'd chosen one of the chairs, assuming I might get trapped alongside her if I sat on the bench. Instead of choosing the bench, she took the other chair and pulled it tight against mine, grabbing my arm, rubbing it emphatically. "It's so cold in here, I'm freezing." Our waitress was quickly at our table, looking rather haggard from serving the large lunch crowd. "Can I bring you something to drink?" she asked as she set two coasters on the table. "I'll have an appletini," Sheila said. "Just water for me," I said. Sheila gave me a sad look that accentuated lines around the corners of her mouth and the crow's feet around her eyes. Now I guessed her age to be 40. "Just water?" Sheila asked. "Wouldn't you rather have a martini or at least a beer?" Brian Johnson just dropped off the music for the Thursday concert, and I scanned through it. I need a clear head to read through the arrangements more completely this afternoon, I lied. "How are you feeling?" "A lot better than the last time you saw me. The EMTs said you saved me by giving me the EpiPen. I guess I owe you my life." "I'm happy it all turned out well," I replied, which brings me to the question, "Are you planning to play in the park Thursday?" She shivered and quickly looked away, obviously uncomfortable with the question. I quickly added, "You don't need to answer right now, but we'd really like to have you back. I see you have a solo in the Triumphal March." The Appletini arrived and she drank from it deeply. "I don't know if I'll be up to it," she replied. "The police chief interviewed me. He thinks someone deliberately put a peanut in my reed case. That's a very cruel thing to do." "Can you think of anyone who might do something like that?" "Not any of the men," she replied, flashing a coquettish smile and looking better. The alcohol was starting to hit her. "I suppose there are a few women who might be jealous of the attention I get." "Has anyone ever threatened you?" I asked. "Not directly," she said, draining her drink and signaling the waitress for another. "Are you sure you don't want something?" "I don't think so," I replied. "Did you notice anyone tampering with your reeds during the intermission?" She shook her head and said, "I was feeling a little dehydrated by the heat, so I bought a bottle of water." She looked around like she was trying to escape my questions. The waitress arrived with the refill and asked if we'd made our lunch choices. I ordered the planked salmon, thinking the cost was about a half day's pay, and then shuddered at the thought that I might be picking up the costs of the Appletinis and Sheila's lunch, too. Sheila ordered a Caesar salad with a grilled chicken breast. "You're a very talented musician," I said. "The band wouldn't be the same without your bassoon." She smiled politely and sipped her drink. "I take a lot of pride in my music." She paused and stared out the window for a moment. "I suppose someone might be jealous of my talent." "Do you think there might be a jealous spouse somewhere out there?" Sheila shrugged and said, "I seriously doubt that." "Are there any specific suspects you'd like to share?" Sheila leaned against me again. "You're dating that skinny nurse. Do you think she's the jealous type?" "It'll never be an issue," I said firmly. She first gave me a playful smile. "Oh, are you like Jesse, more into boys than girls?" "I understand that music attracts some folks with mixed sexuality. Are you into boxers or tighty whities?" Lunch arrived and thankfully provided a break in the banter. Sheila ordered another refill. "You really need something to loosen up. You're wound too tight," she said as she sliced the chicken breast atop her salad. "Someone said you were a Marine in Iraq. Is that true?" "I was in the Navy," I replied, leaving the details unsaid. "I've heard sailors always have a hot meal and a dry bed," she said. "It must be awfully lonely sitting on a boat for months at a time. I suppose you really blow off steam when you get into port?" I was surprised by her question and her ability to slide it into the conversation without missing a beat. I could feel the color rising up my neck. She was reveling in my discomfort. Ooh, did I hit a sore spot? "Can we get back to the band?" I asked. "We can go anywhere you want." "I'd really like to have you on the bandstand Thursday night." I put my utensils down and pushed my chair away from her to regain some personal space. "Sheila, I think you're a talented musician and an obvious asset to the city band, but I'm really not interested in anything more personal with you than possibly giving you a hug after your spectacular solo Thursday night. Can you live with that?" Two businessmen at a nearby table overheard the exchange and were apparently amused. Sheila licked her lips, drained her drink, and straightened up. She signaled the waitress for our bill. "Are you interested in a business or home loan?" she asked. "I don't think so," I said, confused by the strange question. When the waitress arrived, Sheila pulled a Visa card from the back pocket of her shorts and put it into the folio, handing it back to the waitress. "We just had a meeting to discuss your possible loan, and the business lunch is on my expense account." Oh, well, thank you. Suddenly sober, she said, not a problem. The bank gives me a business account and I use it discreetly. I generate more good business for them than any other loan officer without spending half my afternoons on the golf course or sitting in a bar with my buddies. I spend several hours a day at the gym making contacts, and the bank pays for my membership. No one at the bank complains. Something gnawing at the back of my brain came to the surface as we waited for the waitress to return. I saw your quilt at the fair. It was impressive. Compliment caught her off guard. Thanks. How long did it take you to sew the quilt? She nervously drank from her already empty martini glass. It took months. The waitress arrived with the receipt, and she signed quickly without further comment. Please come to Thursday's concert, I said, standing as she rose from the table. She turned and took a step, then looked back at me. Something in her veneer had cracked, and her face lost its hardness. I'll be there Thursday night, and I'll be spectacular. Try to keep me alive. The swing in her hips was gone, replaced by a determined stride as she left the restaurant. Whistling Sousa, Chapter 18. I spent the rest of Monday afternoon walking the shoreline of Lake Superior near the boat launch. I climbed around the huge black boulders, inhaling the scent of the big lake and trying to remember the details of the night the band played at the fair. I was coasting on adrenaline most of the night and really couldn't remember anything related to Sheila or the things going on around her chair on the bandstand. I'd been nervous about the meeting between my mother and Jenny's parents, and I'd looked back at them several times to see if Mother had arrived, and then worried about the dinner afterwards and the potential fireworks between Mom and Jenny's parents. My fears were unfounded, mostly because Jenny's parents were very nice, quiet Scandinavians. I could hardly imagine a better outcome for the evening. Well, except for the outing of my military past, even that turned out better than I could have expected. Now I've earned Jenny's parents' respect and approval. I sat on the rocks and stared at the blue swells as they slapped against the rocks. The warm wind was blowing from shore, leaving only the slightest scent of fish and seaweed. Gulls squawked overhead, then swept out toward an incoming fishing boat. The fishermen often cleaned their catch and dropped the offal behind the boat as they approached the harbor. The gulls flew out to meet the boats, hoping for an easy meal. My thoughts turned to my lunch with Sheila, which was just as tense as the dinner with our parents. Sheila had sexuality that many men found attractive. I found it off-putting. I walked off the riprap and found some small stones worn smooth by eons of rolling against each other in the waves. I chose a flat stone and skipped it across the water. The gulls were screeching and diving behind the incoming boat. The past 2 weeks' episodes of this program can be listened to from the ktwh.org website. Simply click on Literally from the North Shore from the program's drop-down menu found at the top of the homepage to listen to the archived shows.